This is Ozarks at Large from March 17th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com. Much going on in the Fort Smith region this week. We'll have that conversation in just a bit. And we continue our series on honors students and undergraduate research at the University of Arkansas. Today we'll meet Luke Knox, a student studying art at the University of Arkansas. First, though, news from the legislature. A capital gains tax proposal, which spurred hopes of job creation among Arkansas Republicans, has failed in a Senate committee. The bill, by Representative Ed Garner, was passed by the House a month ago. However, it failed to get the 5 votes necessary in the Senate Revenue and Tax Committee to advance. Representative Garner says he's not surprised, but still disappointed.
You must invest capital to create new jobs, and this bill would not have any impact until someone actually sold the investment. So the investment itself is job creating. New capital creates jobs. Try to find businesses that start without capital. You can't do it.
Garner disagrees with the estimates that the capital gains cut could have taken over $65 million a year out of state coffers. Governor Beebe says the state budget can't afford the tax cut. Committee Chair Larry Teague says senators on the committee took that seriously.
We have a responsibility to keep us solvent and paying our bills and doing well. So I think the question is, how much did it cost? What did it bring in? In my case, if I'm going to make a mistake, I want to make the mistake on the side of protecting the state.
There is hope that the stalemate between House and Senate over which taxes to cut will end soon as leaders try to negotiate a compromise.
A proposal to buttress the state's unemployment fund by limiting the growth of benefits is on its way through the legislature. The bill by Senator Jonathan Dismaying would freeze the level of benefits paid out and reduce the benefit period for regular unemployment by 1 week. Dismaying says this will help the state pay back the $330 million it owes the federal government after overdrawing its own fund.
It provides a small degree of reform to the unemployment system here in the state of Arkansas. It's not a short-term fix, but a long-term move in the right direction to try to shore up that balance and get our unemployment trust fund moving in the right direction.
The measure is opposed by major unions who say it puts the burden of restoring the fund's money on the backs of workers and not employers. Governor Mike Beebe says Secretary of State Mark Martin may have used money designated for legislative redistricting without authorization. The Board of Apportionment, which includes Beebe, Martin, and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, held its first meeting yesterday. About $70,000 have already been spent on a car, consulting contract, and a staff hire. Martin says he doesn't think the expenses were inappropriate.
I was under the understanding that was at the discretion of the Secretary of State for the expenditures of moving forward with redistricting. So any of the expenditures, I think, are within what is a normal process, considering that the redistricting board has not met until this late date.
But Beebe says the board should have voted on those expenses. Beebe says he believes the outlays were an honest mistake, but if some of them can't be ratified as legitimate expenses, they'll have to come out of the Secretary of State's budget.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, the editor of the City Wire website that's devoted to business, politics, culture, and more of the Fort Smith region. A wide variety of news on the City Wire this week. Everything from sort of history to culture to politics. If you don't mind, I'd like to start with the Board of Apportionment Organizing. That's the group that's going to lead us through redistricting.
Yes, through the legislative side of redistricting. You know, the legislature, the Arkansas legislature redistricts congressional districts, but the Board of Apportionment, which is Governor Beebe, Attorney General Dustin McDaniel, and Secretary of State Mark Martin, they're the Board of Apportionment. And thankfully, Roe v. Brock reported on that for us, and it started off very awkward, Kyle. Apparently, Secretary of State Mark Martin spent about $70,000 out of a budget of only $200,000 that it was set up for this board already, I mean, before they even got started. So Governor Beebe and Attorney General McDaniel were not happy at the first meeting.
And this is a process that will, well, I mean, it's not going to take that long once it gets going, supposedly.
No, it shouldn't take long. And again, you know, we've been promised that there's, you know, we now have this fancy schmancy software that can cut, you know, down to the street level and redistrict legislatively to the exact number. So hopefully it won't take long. You know, hopefully it won't require a lot of money. But the numbers, roughly the numbers, House districts have to be about 29,000 people, and Senate districts are just a little over 83,000 people. And keep in mind, they'll still keep it at 35 senators, state senators, and 100 state reps. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting how they divide. You know, of course, counties have always been divided up with legislative districts, but this time we have a legislature that's more evenly divided in terms of Republicans and Democrats. So this will be an interesting process.
There is about a little over a week left for opponents of a 1% prepared food tax in Fort Smith to submit more than 2,800 valid signatures to have the question on the ballot in front of voters whether this tax, which has been passed by the city board of directors, whether it should stay.
Correct. And, you know, I talked to one of the organizers earlier this week, and he admitted to having maybe 2,000, around 2,000, which only 10 days out, they're going to have to get cranking, because these have to be 2,800, I think it's 2,822 valid signatures. So I remember at one of their early meetings, one of the organizers who has done this before, conducted this type of petition thing before, said, you better at least get 5,000 signatures, just so as they, you know, cut some off, there will be some duplicates and that type of thing, you at least get to 2,800. So they've got a lot of work to do in the next 10 or 9 days if they're going to get the right number of signatures. And March 25th is their deadline.
Something else I've read on the City Wire this week, Kavanaugh Mound. This is a historic mound that's inside the city limits of Fort Smith, right?
Right. You know, it's the darndest thing, Kyle. I lived here for almost 15 years before I even knew about this. And I first wrote about it last March. But they think that it's a Caddo Indian mound that may have been constructed between 1100 and 1300, of course, AD. But it's about 200 feet long. It's about 40 at each base. It's about 40 foot tall. And it's right here in South Fort Smith. I mean, right, there's a church next to it and a trailer park and a warehouse. I mean, it's just right in the middle of everything. Of course, you know, this used to just be bottom land, just a, you know, stone's throw, so to speak, from the Arkansas and Poteau Rivers. There was nothing here. It was a great place for tribes and different groups to settle because of the confluence of the rivers and all the game and the rich bottom land. But it's interesting. You know, the Archaeological Conservancy has bought the property. And Tim Mulvihill, a archaeologist with the University of Arkansas System, they're now in the process of cleaning it up. They want to do a computer analysis of it to see what's inside, to see how the mound is constructed, what kind of soils, because they have an eastern portion of this mound they have to rebuild. But I don't know. It's just someone who loves history, it's just fascinating that this mound is just right here in the middle of the city.
There's something kind of special happening tonight in Fort Smith with John Bell.
Yes, John Bell, a great artist based here in Fort Smith. He, you know, Larry Foley, a journalist at the University of Arkansas, has pulled together this documentary film about War Eagle and the bridge to War Eagle. It's about the river and its history and what it's meant to that part of the world. Well, a part of that film has John Bell. It's a time lapse of him drawing or painting this image of War Eagle, and it's a wagon, a gentleman driving a wagon across the bridge, and there's a young man in the back, and a dog is trailing them, and there's the War Eagle mill in the background. But I'm looking forward to it. The movie's already premiered in Fayetteville. I think it premiered March 10th, but it'll be here tonight at the Fort Smith Public Library at 7 o'clock, I believe, and Mr. Bell will be there, and it'll be the Fort Smith unveiling of his original print.
And finally, I am a numbers geek. I love numbers, whether it's baseball, whether it's the economy, whatever. And you've put together a new sort of monthly thing for number geeks.
Right. We're calling it the Numbers by the Wire. Of course, it play on the City Wire, but Kyle, we do what's called a compass report. Every quarter, every fiscal quarter, every 3 months, we take a look at the regional economy, you know, where it's been, where it's going, that type of thing. And And we've had such positive feedback from that that one of the things we heard was, how about a quick and dirty monthly look? And so that's what we've done with Numbers by the Wire. And we try to keep it simple. One of the things we've noticed from a lot of the reports you get from federal agencies, government agencies, even universities, you're just flooded with numbers. I mean, it's just graphic after graphic, you know, Excel spreadsheet after spreadsheet of numbers. And it's, you don't know what they mean. What are these numbers telling me? What's the trend? And so what we try to do is to avoid flooding people with information, just provide them with 9 sets of data that just gives them, like I said, a quick and dirty look of what's going on in the economic world around them, just right here in the Fort Smith region. So we hope they'll find it valuable. I'm sure we'll probably adjust this report as we get feedback, because we love to get feedback, and we get a lot of good constructive feedback from our readers, but it's out there on the CityWire. It's just a 2-page PDF people can download and print and pass around. That's the other thing that's simple about it.
Now, let me ask you, because you can look at numbers, and obviously they don't always tell you the whole story, but you have everything like unemployment numbers, but Arkansas river traffic as well. And I read here that sand, gravel, and rock in the first 2 months of 2011 compared to 2010 was down 18%. Do I know what that means?
Well, sand, gravel, and rock are components of the construction industry, and that should give you an idea of what is happening with the construction industry, not only in Arkansas, but in this region that's served by the, you know, the McClellan Kerr Waterway, which is from Tulsa all the way down to the Mississippi River in Arkansas. So that gives you an idea of, you know, road construction, housing construction, you know, any type of construction. I'd be remiss. Benefit Bank here in Fort Smith helps to sponsor this. They're a great sponsor, and they've signed on and approved this as well.
And it's called Monthly Numbers by the Wire, and you can find it at the City Wire.
Yes, sir.
Michael Tilley is the editor of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, culture, and more for the Fort Smith region. Michael, again, happy St. Patrick's Day, and thanks for your time.
You as well. Talk to you next week.
This is Ozarks at Large. A new documentary film about the War Eagle Creek not only weaves together stories and experiences centered around the creek, but also hopes to enlighten people on the need to conserve such unprotected streams. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar reports on the documentary Bridge to War Eagle.
A new documentary film created by the Emmy Award-winning filmmaker duo Larry Foley and Dale Carpenter premiered at the Fayetteville Public Library last week. According to Larry, who's also a University of Arkansas journalism professor, the documentary Bridge to War Eagle is a story about the War Eagle Creek in the Ozarks and about people who want to protect its legacy.
That is the source for other streams like the Buffalo River, the Big Piney Creek, and White River. Different from the Buffalo in that it is not protected, and it does flow into the water supply for all of Northwest Arkansas, Beaver Lake. But it's really about the stories of people who love this particular stream and are doing everything they can to protect it. And the whole film is framed around one of the most iconic scenes in all of Arkansas, the old iron bridge that leads to that grist mill there at War Eagle Creek, where the Crafts Festival is held every year.
The idea to do a documentary on War Eagle Creek came from a friend of Larry's who's with Audubon, Arkansas. The friend told him the story of Rufus Stevens, a man whose family has had a cabin near the War Eagle Creek since he was a little boy.
He came there first as a little bitty boy, and his father taught him how to fly fish, and his father died when he was just a boy. And then Rufus Stevens had a son, his only son, only child, who he taught to fish on the stream, and he grew up loving it and decided to follow in his father's footsteps and become a wildlife biologist. Tragically, young Ruth was murdered in Texas in some kind of random killing by a guy that's since been convicted. So now when Rufus goes back to his family cabin a couple of times every year and fishes, he thinks of his dad, he thinks of his son at their own very special place. And others told me about Robert Swain, who makes guitar picks for people like Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson, who lives over there and is one of the stewards of the creek. Later I found out that they were spending about $1 million to restore the bridge instead of tearing it down. So one thing led to the next, and we ultimately had a series of stories all tied to that creek here in the Ozark Hills.
Along with the story of Rufus Stevens, another thing that drew Larry to the story of the creek was the iconic image of the bridge and mill at War Eagle. Since Larry wanted to call the film Bridge to War Eagle, he approached Fort Smith artist John Bell with the request for a portrait of the mill with the bridge in the foreground, made exclusively for the documentary.
Basically kind of asked John if he would be interested in painting a new, he'd done a picture of the mill. So, well, would you be interested in doing another one that's really has the bridge in the foreground? Because I had this idea of calling the film Bridge to War Eagle. And he jumped on the idea, and then we went out to the mill with Maxine Bell and John Bell while they were taking photographs. Now, what's touching about this that a lot of people don't know is that Maxine and John are both in wheelchairs, and John actually can't even use his hands to paint anymore. But that's not really the story. The story is this incredible piece of art that John creates of the War Eagle Bridge in the foreground and the mill in the background. And that's how we open the film, and that's how we close the film. And we also sort of do some time-lapse photography as you see John's marvelous painting come to life.
The documentary team consists of Larry Foley, who wrote and researched the film, Dale Carpenter, who filmed and edited it, Trey Marley, who was in charge of the aerial photography, Emmy Award-winning University of Arkansas music professor James Greeson, who composed an original musical score, Thomas Hapgood from the U of A Art Department, who did the graphics and animation, and Mason Branch, who served as the production assistant for the documentary. The film was narrated by country music star Joe Nichols, who's from Rogers, Arkansas.
I had not met Joe Nichols, but I knew of Joe being a country music star, and certainly he sang that famous song, Tequila Makes Her Clothes Fall Off, which, by the way, he does not sing in this film. But I knew that Joe was from Rogers, and anybody from Rogers has probably been going to War Eagle Creek and the bridge and the mill pretty much all their life. And so a friend of a friend got me in contact with Joe, and he was most gracious and said he would love to do it. And he has a beautiful, almost melodic delivery with his voice. It certainly sounds like an Ozarkian, which is something that we wanted. And I think his narrative of the film really adds a lot of character to it. I think he's just the perfect voice, and I've had several people tell me that.
Larry says some of his favorite moments from the film will also appeal to the viewers.
I think that when you see the opening scenes of the film and you see Maxine Bell and John Bell in their wheelchairs going entering the bridge on these little motorized wheelchairs, passing this red-framed grist mill, immediately you know where you are. Now, you don't know Maxine and John's story yet, but when we were out there filming that in the fall of 2009, and then we interviewed John about what he was about to do, which was about to start this painting, I really thought we had something right there, because I knew what John was going to paint would be marvelous based on his large body of work. So I think that what we were hoping we would do was produce a film that would be interesting and would tug at heartstrings and would be recognizable based on this iconic image that the whole film was framed around.
According to Larry, while Bridge to War Eagle tells some interesting stories, it also carries an underlying message about conservation of streams, such as the War Eagle Creek. The first screening of the film, hosted at the Fayetteville Public Library, was attended by over 200 people. Many more screenings are lined up throughout Arkansas, including one today at the Fort Smith Public Library.
And I have a feeling we're going to have a pretty good crowd down there, to a large degree because John Bell is from there and he has a large following, and John's going to bring his original art and unveil it there at that time. On April the 2nd, we're having our first Benton County screening at Hobbs State Park at 2 p.m., and I have a feeling because this is a Benton County story to a large degree, we'll have a pretty good crowd there. We also are planning on screening it in Little Rock at the Clinton School on May the 10th, and we have a June 3rd evening screening in Huntsville, Arkansas, And I believe that's going to be on an outdoor theater on the downtown square. So folks will look forward to that one, I think, and probably future screenings also. Eventually, we'll provide it to ETN for public broadcast. And the DVDs are available through University of Arkansas Press.
For more information about the documentary film Bridge to War Eagle, please log on to their website, uark.edu/UA/War Eagle. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
This is Ozarks at Large. Ahead on the program, we continue our series on undergraduate research at the University of Arkansas, and Becca Bacon-Martin from What's Up in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers gives us a guide to St. Patrick's Day. Tomorrow night on Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg on KUAF, a candid interview with jazz guitar prodigy Julian Lage. He'll discuss his rise to stardom and his new recording, Gladwell. And also, University of Arkansas student media director and widely respected jazz drummer Steve Wilkes will join Robert Ginsberg in a tribute to the late legendary drummer Joe Morello. Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg, Friday night, beginning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
L is for the way you look at me.
Musician Nat King Cole was born on this date in 1917. Cole grew up in Chicago, where by age 12, he sang and played organ in the church where his father was pastor. He formed his first jazz group, the Royal Dukes, 5 years later. In 1937, he began playing in jazz clubs in Los Angeles. There he formed the King Cole Trio. An influence on jazz pianists such as Oscar Peterson, Cole was known for a compact, syncopated piano style with clean, spare, melodic phrases. During the late 1930s and early 40s, the trio made several instrumental recordings, as well as others that featured their harmonizing vocals. They found their greatest success, however, when Cole began doubling as a solo singer. Their first chart success, Straighten Up and Fly Right, was followed by hits such as Sweet Lorraine, It's Only a Paper Moon, I Love You for Sentimental Reasons, and Route 66. Eventually, Cole's piano playing took a backseat to his singing career. He first recorded with a full orchestra in 1946 for The Christmas Song, a holiday standard and one of Cole's biggest selling recordings. By the 1950s, he worked almost exclusively as a singer. Nature Boy, Mona Lisa, Too Young, A Blossom Fell, and Unforgettable were among his major hits of the period. Cole's popularity allowed him to become the first African American to host a network variety program, The Nat King Cole Show, which debuted on NBC television in 1956. Cole had greater success with concert performances during the late 1950s and early 60s, and twice toured with his own vaudeville-style revues. Cole was also a capable actor and performed in the movies Istanbul, China Gate, and Night of the Quarter Moon. He also played himself in the Nat King Cole musical Story and portrayed blues legend W.C. Handy in St. Louis Blues.
Love that was made for me and you. Love that was made for me and you.
On this date in 1992, President George H.W. Bush presented the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, to Sam Walton. Bush described Walton as an illustration of the American dream, who helped to bring economic prosperity to his community and to the nation. According to tradition, St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, died in Saul on this date. Some sources list the year as 461. Others say 493. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is Thursday, March 17th, 2011, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Patrick Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin and Antoinette Grajeda. Becca, of course, is the...
Ow!
What happened there?
Antoinette's not wearing green.
Ah, it is St. Patrick's Day. Becca is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. Help me out, Becca.
Kyle Patrick?
It is.
It sounds very Irish.
It is very Irish. This is one of my favorite days of the year.
All right, then. Well, I know I'm partly Irish because I love potatoes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Go with it. You can celebrate St. Patrick's Day with the McCafferty Irish Dancers at 5 o'clock today, right across the street from us at the Fayetteville Public Library.
That's just part of what's happening tonight.
You can go and hear the first performance.
That's right.
It's not Irish, but the first performance of the new Symphony of Northwest Arkansas.
Sona's opening.
Tonight at the Walton Arts Center, pieces by Brahms, Mendelssohn, and Joshua Penman. Shows at 7 o'clock. There will also be a creative conversation featuring the director, Paul Haas, and the Walton Arts Center president and CEO, Peter Lane, at 6 before the show. That part's open to the public for free. Tickets for the rest of it are $15 to $35 at 443-5600. Bridge to War Eagle. The new documentary by UA filmmakers Larry Foley and Dale Carpenter at 7 o'clock tonight at the Fort Smith Public Library. It's free. A Genesis Found, an independent film by an Alabama filmmaker, will be at the Mullins Library at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville at 7 tonight. It's part of the Southeastern Campus Tour of Indie Films. It's free. And if you get there early, he's going to have DVDs with making of and mockumentary and interesting things on them. So if you're a would-be
extras.
Filmmaker, you should go early.
Are these DVDs?
Free.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah.
Good deal.
Part of the Goddess Festival, an event called Sacred Exchanges with Nature with Jeff and Leslie Olsner, tonight at 7 o'clock. Their new location this year is between CC's Pizza and Hoo Hot in Uptown Fayetteville. That starts at 7 and it's free. Jazz musician Tia Fuller is at Second Street Live in Fort Smith tonight at 7. The concert starts at 7:30, I'm sorry, and tickets are $35. Space Capone. I know nothing about this band, but I love the name.
I've been through before.
The Funkin' Soul Revivalists from Tennessee will be at Rogue Pizza tonight for a St. Patrick's Day party, starting at 9 o'clock, and it's just $5. And comedy improv artist Dan's Party will be performing tonight with a special guest performance by Artist Laboratory Theater.
A comedy improv dance party?
Dan's Party.
Oh, okay. I was really interested in what the comedy improv party would be.
No.
Okay.
Dan's. The name Dan.
Gotcha.
Apostrophe.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I gotcha. Okay.
And they have been, I don't know if they still are, but what has set them and Fun Bags apart is that Dan's Party has been doing the long form comedy improv.
Sketch comedy?
Right.
Okay.
Versus the short form that Fun Bags does. So an interesting experience, and I don't know what Artist Laboratory Theater is doing with them. But it sounds interesting. And it starts at 10 o'clock at Teatro Scarpino in Fayetteville, and it's $5.
Thanks, Becca.
I'm tired now.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. This week and beyond, we're featuring undergraduate research at the University of Arkansas. Nearly 90 students earlier this year learned that they had been awarded SURF grants. SURF stands for Student Undergraduate Research Fellowship. The first two student interviews in this series took place in the offices of the students' faculty advisors. For an interview with Luke Knox, an Honors College art student, the interview took place at his apartment.
This is a work in progress, and it's a wire sculpture. You know, I was doing some free associating, thinking about different ideas and different occurrences throughout history, and then throughout kind of our modern contemporary sense of understanding nature.
Luke's living room, just across the street from campus, serves as a studio. His senior thesis is a bit different than many others. It's three-dimensional. He's exploring the relationship between man, animals, and myth, taking cues from sources as different as Aesop, Joseph Campbell, and art historian Abby Warburg. He's using materials like wood and baling wire to fashion his work. Animals seen one way with the naked eye, and maybe a slightly different way after some inspection.
Artistically speaking, the baling wire acts as a really fluid, almost gestural line, and that's my emphasis. So I'm kind of innately attracted to baling wire as a medium with sculpture, and then every piece that's inside of it is eventually going to have some sort of connection to this Roman pastoral ideal and this I'm thinking of tying in ideas of colonialism into this piece, and it's, I don't know, it's going to, the piece in itself is going to hit on a lot of different subjects. Maybe not all of them are going to be recognized right off the bat, but upon explanation, they might.
Luke Knox's enthusiasm for his work is palpable. Spend any amount of time with him, and you can't wait to see how his work will appear when finished. Appropriate, then, that his faculty advising for the thesis is coming from Kristen Musnug, a professor in the University of Arkansas Art Department. Luke first took a class taught by Kristen, experimental drawing, in 2009.
I remember us getting sort of both excited about like these geeky aspects of making art materials that semester, that you guys got interested in making paper, and so I learned how to make paper, and most of the students weren't that interested in it, but you like really were, and then we were making ink out of walnuts and pokeberries and I don't even remember what all we did.
I remember whenever I first got into her class, I was interested in what I was doing, but I wasn't really that engaged until I realized that there was this entire universe of art that I hadn't really explored. And I think Kristen really introduced me to all that.
Though Luke's thesis might not be contained exclusively in a research paper or an academic journal, there is still a basic question at the root of what he's doing. Why? Knox says, if you think about it, there's no easy, logical reason to do what he's trying to do. But he says he thinks art is an excellent way to examine something you might not otherwise think about in a way you might not have considered.
You know, someone would ask me, why do I do this? Or why does anybody do it for that matter? And I think that let me put it like this. If you try and explore something through art, you know, over a matter of time in creating that artwork, you will eventually come to a point where you understand everything, but everything that's connected to that thing too, in a very strange sense. But it kind of works in a strange sense.
And unlike many other senior projects, Luke's will be very public. An exhibition is scheduled for December. Senior projects in science, agriculture, or history may be read or seen mostly by people interested in that discipline. A public art exhibit, though, can be seen by anybody. And that means a project that Luke has toiled over, literally lost sleep over, may be viewed and evaluated by some for just 5 seconds before moving on.
I'm glad they gave it 5 seconds. So, I think that it's, in a sense, it's a really personal thing for me to explore this. Because, you know, I'm trying to learn this thing on my own. This is essentially a research project. So basically, I'm trying to learn everything I can about this. And, you know, maybe I might not hit the nail on the head this time, but if I pursue it later on, I feel like this is a pretty good start. And I think that if people look at it and they don't, you know, recognize, oh, that's baling wire. He's obviously referencing a pastoral element and this, you know, whatever. But he or she will at least stop, and it'll at least arise a question, you know. And that's a lot of what Kristen says. You know, you kind of, whenever you make a piece of art, you develop a mystery or something behind it where people at least will question it.
Luke Knox says Kristen Musnug's advice has been valuable. She's pushed him to consider the unifying concept behind his work. She says the best lessons learned in art are the same best lessons learned in any other subject.
It's about things that can't be communicated in words. So it's something that you can't get anywhere else. And I mean, you have to give yourself over to the experience. It's not going to be like a billboard that just announces itself without a little input on your part. But when it does work, it's this amazingly profound form of communication with, you know, the artist might have died 500 years ago, and yet there you are kind of looking at the world through their eyes. And it's great.
And Luke Knox seems to concur. Much as earlier students in this series are creating research that will be used by other people later, Luke says his artwork is for other people. But what he figures out along the way is much more personal.
I think that the product is for other people, but the process is definitely for me. Because ever since I started this, I see the world in a completely different way. I mean, I see the world as more of like a possibility of either learning, or I could find you know, some object to incorporate in something, and then that right there could inspire another connection I can make.
Luke Knox is an Honors College student studying art in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Our series on undergraduate research at the University of Arkansas will continue the week after next with three more students and their faculty advisors profiled. This is Ozarks at Large. Happy St. Patrick's Day. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me, as she is almost every Thursday, is Jody Benosca, the Vice President of Communications for Walton Arts Center. You're wearing your green.
I am, and so are you.
Yes.
Very exciting. Love St. Patrick's
Day. I do, too. It's just about my favorite holiday.
It's pretty fun. Lots of, you know, everybody in green. You like the green beer. You like the leprechauns.
That's right.
It's good times.
It's a holiday for the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas.
Yes, it's their first opening night concert. And back when we were planning and working with them on this, it was kind of fun to think that they would have their St. Patrick's Day, their concert on St. Patrick's Day, because, you know, internally we were all going, hey, you know, the Symphony's back in the green after a couple years of tough work to get out of debt and to, you know, fix their fundraising issues. They are raring to go. And I have not been into one of the rehearsals to hear them, but I have heard from people who have, and they say the sound is great, and it's a beautiful ensemble of players, and that Paul Haas has built a very interesting performance tonight. So we'll have three pieces. We'll have a Brahms Mendelssohn and a piece by a man named Pellman, and that piece is called Songs the Plants Taught Us. And then he also has planned these two musical surprises. And because they're surprises, nobody knows what they are. But at some point during the concert, some kind of music is going to emerge that nobody knows about, and will definitely take the audiences by surprise. So I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
We have a pre-show conversation at 6 o'clock before the show with Paul Haas, and I believe with one of the soloists from the show, and then the concert at 7, and then a post-show party in the lobby where we can celebrate that Sona is back and the music has begun again, and it's just going to be a wonderful night. And it's been a lot of hard work for Paul, the music director, and Karen, the executive director, and all the musicians and the volunteers and the board. So it's a pretty big night, and we're really excited for it.
Tickets still available?
Tickets are still available, and they are quite affordable. They start at $15. So no excuses. Come on out and support the symphony. It's going to be a great night.
For some people, next week is a deviation from regular life because it's spring break throughout Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But before we get to spring break, still some things happening.
We do. We have a couple of new shows this weekend. We have the Pink Floyd Experience Friday night at 8 o'clock. Tribute band, fantastic show. Selling really well. So if you're a Pink Floyd fan and you want to come out, you should get your ticket soon. And Saturday night, we have Arlo Guthrie, 8 o'clock. Of, you know, the beloved musician, folk musician. And that one has some tickets available as well, and you know, he always gives a, I guess the word I would use is, you always just feel sort of comfortable and at home with his music. So we're very happy to have him back. That's Saturday night at 8 p.m.
Okay, so what, spring break's over late March?
A little
bit, but yeah, the week after that's like March 26th.
That's correct. Right. And we have a full week of Broadway. Of a Broadway show that
100 Years
that
of
week.
Broadway.
100 Years of Broadway. This is fun. This is different than our normal Broadway shows. You know, it's not Hairspray or it's not a fully mounted story of a Broadway show. But what you have in this show is five performers who have been in Broadway shows, for everything from Cats to Phantom of the Opera to Jekyll and Hyde to Mamma Mia. They've all been stars on Broadway. And they now do this show called 100 Years of Broadway, where they basically, it's a review. They go through historical Broadway songs, current Broadway songs. When I saw it, you know, in Fort Smith about 2 years ago, they sang from Wicked, they sang from Phantom, they sang from Man of La Mancha, you know, they sang from everything.
But it's not necessarily the same show that
no,
you saw, because they'll roll in some things.
They'll roll some things in. We're hoping they might tease some songs from our season next year, which will be fun. We also had a contest back during Mamma Mia where we invited audience members to submit their favorite Broadway song, and the winner of that, the one that got the most votes will get sung. Don't know what song it is because we're still counting. But they also, there's also a project where they solicit people to put videos of themselves singing up on the web, and they pick someone to come and sing with them on the stage.
Oh, wow.
So all of that information and how to sign up for that is at our website, waltonartscenter.org, and you can also go to singingwiththebroadwaystars.com, and that will tell you the info about the contest. And that runs from the 29th of March through the 3rd of April. 8 performances, Tuesday through Sunday.
Okay.
And then we are into April, and there are all kinds of things going on in April. We have our second-to-last 10x10 arts show with the Compañía Nacional de Danza 2.
And well done.
That's a that's a mouthful. But basically, that is a national dance company from Spain. And Nacho Duato is a famous Spanish choreographer, and this is his company. And so they will be here doing a remarkable dance program, you know, some of the best dancers in the country of Spain. And that's on our 10x10 series, so the tickets are starting at $10. And then we have Maceo Parker on mm-hmm. April 8th.
And we'll have some tickets.
We will.
Over the next couple of weeks,
yes,
to give away on Ozarks.
We sure will. And that one, we're looking forward to that one. That's a special treat mm-hmm. to get to hear him. And we have the Canadian Tenors on April 9th.
Also tickets will be available here.
Also tickets. And then on April 10th, our final 10x10 art series will be the John Pizzarelli Quartet and the Kurt Elling Quintet. So,
which Kurt Elling, because of the snowstorm, mm-hmm. had to be postponed. And this is going to be a one-in-a-kind show. This isn't a tour they're doing together.
No, it's not a tour. They haven't done this, although who knows if they like it. Maybe they will. But no, this is just serendipitous. That's just great. And yeah. it's such a jazz thing to do.
And that's 10x10.
That's 10x10. Yeah, mm. pretty amazing. And that will be the last 10x10 of the year. So it'll be your last shot to get one of those great concerts for $10.
Is it the last 10x10 ever?
No.
Good.
No, I'm thrilled that we're going to continue the program next year. We had the Harvard Glee Club earlier this week, and I talked to a lot of people there who just kept saying, I hope you do this again. And it's been so successful. We're thrilled with it. So we will be doing 10x10 again next year, which is great.
And you're doing Artisphere again this year.
Artisphere is coming up. That's right. Hard to believe we're already into the second year of Artisphere, but right now at waltonartscenter.org, we have a new thing on sale this year. This year, we're selling an Artisphere Festival Pass. And for those of you who don't know what Artisphere is a six-week festival, and it's not a festival like we're used to, you know, where you have a weekend of programming with booths and
at one place.
This is more of a community-wide conversation. And Artisphere's focus is on arts, nature, and sustainability. So all of our programming will focus on those three elements. And last year when we did it, we had such a wide variety of programs that we went, I'm not sure we can really do a pass. We have the same wide variety of programs this year, but we want to give the pass a try.
Well, you've got more time
mm-hmm.
this year. You've had a year to think about how to do things.
And more time to plan for it and get ready for it. So right now at waltonartscenter.org, you can go online and you can buy a pass, and it costs a mere $79. And what that will get you is tickets to any ticketed event in the Artisphere series.
Any. So the Artisphere Orchestra?
The Artisphere Festival Orchestra, which is performing three separate times. Twice on their own and once with the Fulbright Concerto competition. Those tickets are normally going to be $10 to $25 a piece. You can go to any of those for free.
Do you know how many ticketed events there are?
There are, well, we're still adding them,
mm-hmm.
But there are at least 20.
And so $79.
$79 for at least 20 events.
You're gonna, I mean, if you could go to each one and so desired, you're going to get it down to $2 or $3 per event.
Less, probably.
Oh, okay. Well.
When you count all of the, you know, the Nature of Strings chamber mm-hmm. music series that we did last year, this was the small ensembles playing in the chapels throughout the region. We're doing that again. This year, one of the new programs we're doing, which I'm thrilled about, is we're bringing in three National Geographic speakers.
Mm.
So photographers and conservationists who have worked for National Geographic will be here. Those tickets will normally be only $10, but you get those for free. So, oh, and by the way, our Broadway subscriptions for the 2011-2012 season will be starting renewals soon. So
do we know what the season
open.
Is?
We do. I can't
okay.
quite tell
you do.
Yet.
I don't.
I do,
okay.
But I happen to know one of them involves a certain British nanny and her two charges. And chimney sweeps.
Okay.
So it's going to be fun. We're putting the final touches on the 11-12 Broadway season. So that will get announced probably within the next month or so.
Boy, I know a couple of very young friends who are going to be very excited
yes.
about that.
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh. Jody, thanks.
Thanks, Kyle. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And to you.
In honor of Kyle's favorite holiday, today's trivia question will be related to Irish culture. Today's prize is a pair of movie passes to Malco Theaters. The question is, according to Irish folklore, what is the traditional profession of a leprechaun? Is it A, a miner, B, a cobbler, or C, a blacksmith? Call us now for your chance to win at 1-800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF. Before Writer's Almanac, we asked you today's trivia question, which is, according to Irish folklore, what is the traditional profession of a leprechaun? Is it A, a miner, B, a cobbler, or C, a blacksmith? The answer is B, a cobbler.
I did not know that until this morning.
I didn't know it until last night.
I would have thought banker.
Well,
because
right,
of the
with
gold.
The gold and everything right. like that. But nope, it's a cobbler, and there's a whole little story about how you can distract them because they will fix your shoes, but only one shoe. There's something about they get so focused on the one shoe that you'll never get a pair of shoes fixed.
So they're not very good cobblers.
Okay. Right. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, offering a daily e-newsletter featuring late-breaking business news for Northwest Arkansas and the entire state. Registration and information available at nwabusinessjournal.com. A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Patrick.
Which is in Madison County.
It is.
Just in case you were curious. Mike Condren will present a program on the Ozark and Cherokee Central Railway that up until 1942 linked Fayetteville to Okmulgee, Oklahoma. The event is open to the public and takes place at the General Store of the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History tonight, beginning at 7, and the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in downtown Springdale. And don't forget the first concert, the opening concert for Sona Symphony in Northwest Arkansas takes place tonight at Walton Arts Center, that too, beginning at 7. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we'll give away a couple more tickets, this time to Maceo Parker, who will be playing at Walton Arts Center in early April. That's tomorrow on Ozarks at Large. A brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow on KUAF at noon. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Ann Spinecker-Hayda.
Have a great St. Patrick's Day.
Some pleasure for the fine.